Maluleka, Male, Kuluini, Dwanambi, Rajbali, Bolomisa, Sitin, September, Kondro, and Pandeyever. The agenda, honorable members, is really the oversight and accountability model. That's the item that this meeting is focused on. There are other outstanding issues for this committee which are below the line. Can we allow them for half a minute to knock? Thank you. Honorable Makela, we have had endless discussions on this matter. So this is the umpteenth time it's coming back here. We hope it's not for another long discussion. It's really to say this is how it has come out after all the inputs that we have made over time, actually over years. Honorable Bakela.
Thank you, Speaker, and to the members of the Joint Rules Committee. We are finally presenting to you a model that we hope it will be taking Parliament forward in terms of mechanisms to oversee executive in action and any organ of state as the Constitution stipulates. Speaker, let me, with my co-chairperson here, start with just a few remarks and then as examples and some things that we learned along the way. Contrary to perceptions that Parliament in South Africa is weak, the finding on the studies done by the IPU on 188 parliaments released last week, in which South Africa was one of those investigated, and then it's one of the 25 parliaments in Africa investigated for that matter, we are doing well. We are one of the top in terms of oversight mechanisms currently undertaken by this parliament. It also found that South Africa has moved faster since its democracy, faster than some of the established democracies, because in you have also joint standing committees such as status of women, children, people with disabilities, youth children, who are focusing on particular issues on their own as part of the oversight mechanism. And I'm just reflecting on the studies done by the IPU. Also that we have a program currently under the Deputy Speaker, which was sanctioned by the Speaker, where the Canadians also have chosen South Africa to come and study our own system of oversight, which they found it to be quite fascinating, particularly with their committee system, multi-party committee systems that seems to be doing quite a useful work within the Westminster system. And they were even said that we are quite proactive rather than reactive as is the situation in some of the parliaments. And they're also congratulating Parliament around the questions and then supplementary questions, you know, following up on the very member of the executive, the president or the deputy president, which in some of the parliaments they found that does not exist. Issues such as member statements are also appreciated. So they will be spending 14 days up to 1 month in our exchange program as soon as it is approved. Also, in our recent visit to Ghana to celebrate their 50th anniversary of their independence, members of parliament were shocked in that country when we exchanged information about how we do it in South Africa. In the life of the parliament of Ghana, they've never had a question to the president. President only comes once in a year, opens parliament and does it. And whereas in South Africa, you've got that particular effecting system that you could then use, and also to the deputy president. And for them, it was like, you know, it's aloof, it will never happen in Ghana. And but he said, well, we're modernizing parliament, and I think we need to demand also learn from us. Also, the inter-parliamentary study which was done looked at various parliamentary systems which are regarded as presidential parliament, semi-presidential parliament, and bicameral parliament or unit parliamentary systems. And where is presidential parliament? It's only the president that can convene parliament and no one else. And then I think the classical example is in Malawi, where one just spent 3-4 days last week, where parliament has not been meeting because the president is reluctant to convene parliament. He's a majority in parliament, the majority is the opposition party. So because he's a minority, having moved away from his own ruling party and to form a small party, has just been refusing to convene parliament for the purposes of discussion section 65, clause of the constitution, which is an impasse on it. So therefore, in the 14 years of our democracy in South Africa, we think that we should be encouraged if you do our own comparisons in terms of where we are, and therefore really not we are not doing bad, though there is room indeed, you know, for improvement. However, the challenge also is around the issues of quality and content, that for which parliament cannot do much, except that the parties in parliament themselves must therefore ensure therefore quality and content are the issues that are uppermost, because parliament can only develop mechanisms and provide support systems for such mechanism, but the content and the quality of what you do, then that we leave to the political parties themselves. And then, however, parliament can still do a lot in terms of improving the type of resources that are given to committees, particularly the budget allocations. We need to look at it indeed if we want these committees really to perform better, so that they can also, in addition to legislation, affect the accountability of the executive and scrutiny of the executive action and also the implementation programs by government. So that obviously is something that the model is proposing. Also that the previous meetings of the Joint Rules Committee did adopt on the issues of content and subject specialists, which 15 people have now been interviewed, and we hope they will be starting the employment soon, as a way of now beginning to give more support services to the committees, such as we'll be facing in on that particular program. However, the challenges of space in Parliament remains one impending impact that we'll have to deal with in the future of Parliament. In other parliaments, there are dedicated rooms for committees. That is something that is still a challenge to us. They are fully equipped with every resources that you could get in a dedicated committee room. That obviously goes with the issues of space. And then that every member of parliament has a support secretarial as an individual. And then we obviously, even if you can go for that, it's still an ideal situation for us because of the problem of space. And then lastly, that MPs themselves also should be encouraged and be equipped with the requisite skills and knowledge on how to deal, engage, analyze, and interpret, and these are the talent in their work as parliamentarians. That will add up to their own political knowledge that they've gained over years in their own political parties. So we still have to do a lot of capacity building within Parliament, and I hope the programs such as the LGPs, you know, will go a long way in beginning to sharpen that particular area. This process started with Professor Koda, and then went to the John Rules Committee, Task Team on Oversight was established, and it has reported quite numerous times to this committee, and we hope therefore that will indeed, you know, go forward. And those, which is the last point, speaker, before I go to the model, which is going to be brief in terms of the presentation, is that the Westminster system also is something that we also have to look at as we transform Parliament. Yes, we have inherited it from the British, but then it does not mean, therefore, that some creativity cannot then arise, you know, within our own parliamentary dollar. Some of the people who are comparing us as weak will always say that look at the British Parliament. You know, there are these rival MPs from within the ruling party or within the opposition party that can speak their minds. And whereas people forget that the system of electoral system in Britain is different from ours. Ours is a party system. And then people, therefore, are confined to the party mandate and then in addition to the electoral mandate. So, therefore, it is unfair type of a comparison if one has to look at that. But then, in comparison with the rest, as I earlier indicated, you are one of the best parliaments that is really having very good mechanisms to oversee. With those few opening remarks, Speaker, the model is before everybody, and I hope that parties have gone through it. And I'm not going to present all of it as is. In the introduction chapter, it's just really your constitutional precepts guiding the vision and mission of Parliament, what informs us in the development of this particular model. Also, the constitutional requirements for mechanisms on oversight, what the Constitution says about us. And then also the composition and mandates of Parliament. We went through the Constitution and looked on all the mandates that are before Parliament and also the mandates of the focus group. And then on Chapter 2, it's more about the role of Parliament in relation to oversight and accountability as mandated in the Constitution. And when you look at that Chapter 2, you'll find that there are quite blocks which are in page 10, which page 9 and 10 of the document that is before you. That are constitutional sections that Parliament has been given a particular mandate in exercising its oversight and effecting accountability. So we have just pulled them out so that they are in the model and people can be reminded about those particular sections. On Chapter 3 is the institutional characterization of oversight and accountability and existing mechanisms as currently being utilized. That's where then we are then begin to say the current mechanisms that are there, we have listed all of them, members' questions, member statements, and then so forth, so forth. All of them are there to say these are very good practices that we should retain as they are. So that when we go to Chapter 4, then we'll then say where do we need to maximize on the current and what is it that we're proposing as new. Also on Chapter 3 are the tools of oversight, the type of information that comes in Parliament by way of the executive compliance and any other. And then when you look at Category 1, is your constitution, is your tool. Legislation, which is passed by Parliament, is the second tool. Government program, which usually is designed for every 5 years. Those are the tools that can be used by individual member and also by the committees in their oversight and then accountability. And Category 2 are all those issues there, as Ellen indicated, that you know the executive also compliance, like the quarterly statements, annual reports, and so forth, as Chapter 4 compels them. So Chapter 5 compels them to then and give that accountability. And Category 3 are financial tools that are available for Parliament. And Chapter 4 could be then reports that arises from other Chapter 9 institutions as in the Constitution, where we can then take any report of them and then begin to look at oversight and effecting accountability. Then Chapter 4, which is where the decisions are going to be required, is in Chapter 4 and Chapter 5. So those are the chapters, and therefore that we are seeking that this we think are going to be the new mechanisms. 4.1.1 is the institutional mechanism, where it's just the changing of the rules in the main to then accommodate this, where after committees have done or investigated the matter in a cluster way or jointly, there's no mechanism that exists for them to report on into their houses. Instead, they have to report as one single committee, and we therefore think that a rule must be flexible where jointly or in a cluster way committees can report on a jointly or clustered way of investigating the matter. Number two is that we need then to also begin to have rules that are beginning to affect accountability of our participation in all these bodies that are the Pan-African Parliament Union and so forth, including tabling of reports and also referring matters to the relevant committees so those matters be identified as very relevant for execution within our Parliament. And the rules therefore need to be expressive around that issue. Thirdly, we are also proposing that sectoral parliaments such as the Women's Parliament, Youth Parliament, People's Assemblies and others also have expression in the joint rules and also in our different rules of the houses so that they are formally recognized, so that the work that arises out of them can also be referred to various committees, relevant committees, and also to the houses for debate. That also that the Parliament, the Constitution requires that we should also, people, the public can write petitions to the Parliament in the constitutional clause, and that therefore that a mechanism needs to be developed in Parliament to ensure therefore either an office is created, all mechanisms that will be relevant are created for such an expression, you know, to find itself, and so that people can then bring whatever petitions, representations, and submissions. Though in the public hearing it does happen, but if it's an egregious matter, the petitions, the constitution says we need to, and then we are therefore calling parliament to then develop mechanisms. In the legislature, Gauteng, Mpumalanga and others, they have what we call the public petition office, and they even have a petitions committee that then looks at whatever petitions that come. But it's up to the parliament, therefore, then to be creative around that. And then that the last bullet then is a proposal that the consideration of public issues in the Westminster system, you know, we tend to debate and politic on it based on our ideological positions, and as oppositions and the ruling party playing to the gallery. And we say, therefore, there are certain issues, very few of them, though, that we could then pull into what we could then create as a sub-plenary session or a sub-chamber in the National Assembly in particular. We can call it Lekgotleng or Inkundleni, where such consideration of such issues could then be dealt with in a very holistic way within the parliamentary rules, and then it be brought back to the main chamber for adoption and so forth, so that we can find each other as South Africans around those issues. And in that way, parliament can then be seen contributing to the qualitative debate. I don't say the Westminster type of debates are not qualitative, but they seem to be playing too much to the gallery, though. But then with these others, well, with those issues where we think we could then begin to give them quite a consideration. Then 4.12 is a Joint Parliamentary Oversight and Government Assurance Committee. There we are proposing this structure to be established, but then to be under the House chairpersons in both houses as assigned. Its role, it will be then to look at oversight areas that are cross-cutting, cluster-cutting, and committees-cutting. Those issues that a committee alone, you know, will never deal, and even if you cluster it, according to the cluster system that exists, it cut across it and so forth. That then such matters then be elevated to this particular oversight and government assurance committee, which will be a joint rules committee itself, that when it identifies such issues, it brings them here to the joint rules committee. Then upon approval by the joint rules committee, then it can then consider them through whatever mechanisms that exist. And then such issues then be dealt with in that particular way, either public hearings or oversight visits, and then so forth, and bring back the report for consideration to the House. And then therefore, we are proposing that it shouldn't have a running membership. It can only be composed by those portfolio committees or select committees as they relate to the issues, the subject matter at hand. And also that it will also, from time to time, look at the tracking of the executive member statements in the Houses, what they've said they will do, by which period, and with that audit, they can then engage on the audit and then advise the presiding officers to say, we have gone through the issues, here they are, and it is what the executive said, but in investigating further, we found that those things were not fulfilled. It's only those matters that get raised from the floor of the House. So that will be its particular role, so it will not be a full running type of a committee. On the treaties, conventions, and protocols, we're looking at both the compliance, but also we have included also the before the signing. If the treaty, the convention, or the protocol is such a nature that it has a political impact, such should then be presented to Parliament by the executive before the signature. And after the signature, obviously, they do come to Parliament for ratification. And once the ratification has happened, Parliament must then have mechanisms to oversee and ensure, therefore, that we are compliant as a country, and we are not compliant, to engage with the executive around how to ensure, therefore, that we are compliant to some of the instruments that we signed internationally. 4.14, which is the first mechanism we are proposing, is the oversight advisory section, that in Parliament we need to create a section that will be within the LOD, that can then begin to look at the issues of the technical support for committees, the coordination of work, the tracking of issues generally, as well as monitoring mechanisms for issues. And we then said that this oversight advisory section, we will also be processing issues that might come from the PDOs later, any other individual members' issues that get raised in the House through member statements and so forth, which are of fundamental nature. So that we can then, either committees can then look at those issues as they get raised or identified by this particular advisory section, and others then will then be considered for debate discussions in the House. And then that will also include individual members' oversight activities when they do their own oversight mechanism. And we are going to be dividing it into three subunits: one, the financial scrutiny unit, and also the tracking and monitoring, and the advisory unit that will continuously be looking at those. And then that the NA will have its own entity, and then the NCOP have its own, but then also the Parliament have a joint entity. These then are issues when they get identified, they then get processed through the presiding officers and then referred to relevant committees for follow-up and so forth. The fifth one is on the Reserve Bank. On the Reserve Bank, we found that in Act 90 of 1989, if somebody can just give me water, my mouth is very dry. 89, that it's not obliged to account to Parliament or to be overseen by Parliament, though it's established by an Act of Parliament of 1899. And the proposal involves that it just then to the revision or the review of the law that then can then begin to revise that issue, that like any other independent institutions, it should also account or report to Parliament or be overseen by Parliament, but ensuring therefore that its independency remains as is. Issues from the constituency office work, we are saying therefore that Parliament must also create space in its program to also from time to time give members of Parliament to express their views and opinions in addition to the member statements, where they could be given at a time, 30 minutes or 60 minutes, whatever, to speak to all those constituency offices, province by province, so that then we could also begin to hear what MPs are doing on the ground and what are the issues that confront them and how they were dealing with them, or what are the process or proposals for Parliament that it needs to do to effect. On seventh one, with the appointment on the institutions supporting constitutional democracy and other specialized institutions, that Parliament has a role from time to time to appoint where vacancies arise, and through a system that Parliament has in place by referring matters to the committees, that this advisory section can then monitor and then identify those issues, so that well on time, advices then can be given the presiding officers to then be on board around those issues. That an ad hoc committee from time to time, or every term of Parliament, needs to be created to look at the audit of statutes and make recommendations out of this particular audit of statutes that gets published. But then we don't look at them and consider and then pick up issues there. The eighth one is the public participation. That while this was not the initial mandate of the oversight, it came into our way, and then we really need to give it quite maximum attention. And what we are proposing in the main here is that we need to develop a separate model on public participation arising from the two cases that were pronounced by the court, and begin to come up with a holistic oversight on the holistic public participation. Therefore, I acknowledge therefore that there's a gap, and then again we need a model for this gap so that we don't mix it with this particular model, because Parliament's call for mandate includes public participation and public involvement, oversight, legislative processes, and so forth. So the other type is sanctioning non-compliance by the executive, and here we are saying mechanisms need to be effected or developed that will ensure therefore that where there's no compliance by the executive and then the systems of the leader of government business and also the speaker is exhausted, some kind of a mechanism needs to be put in place that could then begin to look at that particular issue and ensure therefore that. And then down the line we also have proposed that There's a rule that gave 14 days of reply to the questions to the executive, be retained back into the rules, but then expand it to 21 days instead of the 14 days. So that then within, we can then be able to say at least there's a complete compliance on the executive on the questions that members raise, either written and so forth, particularly the written ones. The maximization of those are the nine proposals that we are making the learner for decision making. 4.2 is more maximizing the current mechanism. The reporting by committees to the houses, I think we said that we need that, therefore that the committees also be given quite enough time to table issues in the house. Currently, sometimes you only take the chair for 5 minutes and so, and then yet there's so much work of oversight that will be arising out of the committees that they really will want to share with the rest of the house, and therefore quite space needs to be given there so that then we could then deal with those issues. However, capacity to the committees will be of fundamental nature so that those reports indeed reach that particular standard and ensure therefore that they're able to be debated in the house. And where there is a recommendation to the executive to process all those particular recommendations and the feedback by the executive in terms of us reporting back to the electorate. The 4.2 is debate initiated by presiding officers that while parties and members can initiate quite pressing issues in the house, we are also saying that the rule needs to be extended 104 to include also the speaker or the chair person of the council to can also initiate a debate themselves. That they will think is quite important for the nation. That developing specialization for certain parliamentary committees, here we only put in the principles that certain committees, like in other parliaments in the world, they have a particular specialization, and therefore even how you resource them and how you structure them becomes very important. For example, your joint committees, status of women, status of children, currently the way they are allocated and then also resource, and yet they are doing all ministries in terms of gender issues, and then the other ones, youth developmental issues, is not only the line ministries. They go across ministers. Your SCOPA goes across ministers. Your finance committee goes across. And we say therefore such committees just as an example for now, because we didn't list them. And then we say parliament from time to time, when it starts its term, it will then identify because priorities will differ from one term to the other term. That is why we are not using them. However, these are the principles that we say. Let's also begin to look at those committees as doing a specialized type of work and be resourced differently and so forth. And in addition, that part of their work needs also to get platform in the house where women can, status of women can come in and say the following departments are compliant in terms of gendering. However, the following, we find that there are quite a number of challenges, and therefore we recommend as follows, so that those reports can be tabled with recommendations, because once the report has a house recommendation, it's more powerful for compliance by the executive. But if it's just a decision of the committee somewhere sitting in a corner, it will just sit there, and then nothing will come out, and yet useful work gets done and so forth. Appointment of ad hoc committees, we say the system must be retained, is a very useful one for investigation of issues as is the case. And then we're making additional proposals in terms of reinforcing the rules. Accountability and oversight in relation to the executive, we're also saying that that's also, it's where we're dealing with the 21 days and then retaining the rule that there was for 14 days, but expanding it to 21 days. Individual member oversight, we said these are the issues that members, as individual members, will always bring through their own political parties, or through their own as individuals and make them through, and then we're making certain proposals there. And then there are also general recommendations, which is 4.3 about the rule changes. Chapter 5 is the procedure for amendment of money bills. I understand the document is now before you. I don't know whether it has arrived. There's a proposed legislation of 4 pages that we will want to submit also to this committee. That is now beginning to propose on the amendment of money bill section 77. So and then it's been circulated, and then that is what we are proposing, and that once adopted we want it to be referred to the portfolio committee on finance so that they can then start calling for public hearing. It goes through a subject of public hearings by the nation, and then back and look at it, make amendments and comments. It will come to Parliament and we debate it and then we adopt it. So just look at it and we are calling for that to do that. This chapter is just saying we did complete our work on that particular area. Chapter 6 then is just more about cooperative governance, the values that are guiding us, and then we must also that we need to be careful that when we do our oversight, there is also provinces have oversight powers within their own jurisdiction. And also local government does have monitoring powers within their own jurisdiction. So Parliament should not also in the conduct of its activity just go as if nothing is happening on the ground. And then the oversight, parliamentary oversight services will also assist the committees if they want to do a certain oversight in the province. They will also check with the province if that has been done. And if so, why don't we share the information with the province rather than allowing another committee to go? Or sometimes within the same parliament, the two houses go into the very same area. NGOP go in there, NA also go in there. And then the chapter just says, let them begin to pull this thing to say, we are not alone with all the powers of oversight within the land. And then that some coordination also needs to be in place. And then I think that would will also be helping us. And also that we're introducing the cycles that will also guide committees' work in terms of the oversight of activities in addition to the thematic areas that will identify from year to year. Chapter 7 is dealing with the increasing of capacity of committees, including training, additional support for committees, as some of the issues were dealt with in the past. And Chapter 8, that a document will then be presented later in the year, hopefully, with the best practice guide. They've already done 11th draft of the document, and quite a useful engagement document that the committees will be using to guide themselves in terms of operationalizing the committees. Because committees are important, because they are extension of the house, and then we need therefore to ensure therefore that they are guided within a particular best practice guidance so that quality of work that they do then can also find resonance in the house and compliance that they need where they need arises. And so that one will then be presented as soon as it's ready. They are waiting for the adoption of this model and they will then look at it and then draft present. The project focus group is all the issues that we did in terms of research, and which is a very useful information that we will also be submitting as hard copy documents that will then go into the legacy or the institutional memory of Parliament, so that as Parliament's life continues, then they could also look at some of the information that came in. It's the interviews with the constitutional experts, interview with those who participated in the CODESA and the multi-party negotiations forum. It's also the issues of the audit of the public bodies performing public functions, and it's 726 of them. And then we have identified those that account to the National Assembly is 77, and then we also have a list of them in terms of where they need to report. And then the review of the rules, you know, to really affect this model is 9.4. And the last chapter is just conclusion and the emphasis on the issues as they are. Thank you, Speaker. I think that is the model as we present it to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bapela, for your comprehensive presentation of the report on the extensive work done on the oversight and accountability model. As I said when we started, extensive discussions have taken place over a number of years of this work that is contained, which was just presented. So I don't even want to go chapter by chapter. I am just going to say, is there an issue that any member would like to raise for clarification or making a pointed recommendation? Ms. Mento, Kisa, Mike, Mr. Davidson, in that order.
Thank you, Madam President.
night can still be. So the issue that I will raise now, I'm not raising it because we should not adopt the model. I would still think that we should be in a position to adopt it today. And what maybe the issues will raise will be the issues will be improving the model moving forward. Madam Speaker, the issue of research, I personally think that in-house research for committees is fine, is adequate, we are improving on it. But I wonder if Parliament doesn't want to look into the issue of having an institutionalized research entity. That is not necessarily inward looking in terms of support for work of Parliament. We could be wanting, for instance, an issue to be researched. I know that the first, normally, there is an option of asking commissioning research, asking a research institute or a university to do that for us. But I wonder if we don't want to look into the possibility of having a research institute in the name of Parliament. For instance, the issue of checking the impact of legislation on the lives of our people is big. It's one that no committee can do or Parliament can do. It's an issue that we could throw into such an institute to say that check for us in this legislation, this country which was incepted this particular year, is there any impact, positive or negative, as was intended by legislation? So that would be my first issue. My last one, Madam Speaker, I see the issue of international agreements, and we refer to it in the middle only in terms of the international agreements as UNIS, you know, United Nations or whatever, that are normally signed by a number of countries. I wonder what are we going to do about trade agreements? I think government is getting away with MENA in terms of, I don't mean this in a negative way, but we don't have a way of checking as Parliament whether the trade agreements that government enter into will facilitate what the Constitution says in the best way, uplifting the economic situation of the country and of the people, etc., etc. So I don't know if also that we want to, as we move forward with the model, as we improve it, we would like to look into mechanisms without wanting to micromanage government. But I think issues of trade are great issues. So many things depend on it, and I think Parliament is left out of the loop of monitoring those agreements. Thanks. Honorable Sinori.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Congratulations to the team that worked on the model. It's a lot of work. I want to agree with the suggestion that says we need a more robust research presence for Parliament. I don't have the details, but I think that the sort of work that we are envisaging for Parliament to do requires to be based on a very sound research work, active research. And so I agree with the broad idea that we need to increase our research capacity. The second point that I wanted to raise relates to the time frames that we need to put on the public participation story. That's very critical. In fact, Madam Speaker, going to the IPU, there's a little amendment we are talking about discussing around this issue. So, a lot of work gets done, but we haven't, in the chapter that looks at Parliament in the past 10 years, there was a little chapter, very thin, on public participation. And it's very thin. In other words, it underrepresents the work that has been done around that area. And we need to give time frames for its completion to complement the model that has been done. The model suggests it, but doesn't speak to the time frames within which we must actually complete that work. So I would really think that we tighten that up a little bit. I don't have proposals, but it might be useful to make sure that that gets done before the end of the year, so to speak. Thank you, Chair President.
Honourable Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I too would like to congratulate the Honourable Chair. I don't know where he's gone. CFUs on the excellent work done. I think it is a very good document. To be mischievous, I only wish we had read chapter 2 before the previous meeting on oversight and accountability, but I will let that slide. Madam Speaker, what I would like to address is 4.2.5, and that's account for the oversight in relation to the executive. There are 3 points I wish to make here. One is an inquiry. What is the necessity to extend the time period for the answers from 10 days to 21 days? I do have reservations as far as that is concerned. I would like to know what the motivation behind that is. The second point is this, that I see the rule of concern that if there isn't a reply within that specific period in time, the member has the right to convert that to an oral question. Now, the problem that I have with that is this, that very often the nature of the question, oral question as opposed to written, are fundamentally different. Oral is very much a more general type of question, whereas a written, very often you're asking for very specific details, but sometimes it can be quite technical. To convert that kind of technical response, or desired response, to an oral response, I mean, I think could be somewhat problematic, and I think the ministers would find it very difficult in that context. The third point, and the final point, is this, the whole question of sanction. The point made at the end of the first paragraph is this, that it is still a moot point as to what happens to a question standing over more than once, as there are such instances, and no sanction in this regard exists. Even the first paragraph. Now, that indeed is the question that we need to address, because we do know, as the document itself indicates, that there are very many questions standing over, both in respect of the President and very often in respect of ministers. And what is the sanction in this regard? I'm particularly attracted to that which happens in the Gauteng provincial legislature, where if the minister actually does not, or the MEC does not present a reply within a given space of time, he has to stand up and give an explanation. I'm not saying that that's the proposal I wish to make, but I do think that we need to build in some sort of very firm recommendation in terms of that. I am aware of 4.1.9, which is the sanctioning of non-compliance by the executive, which just requires the Speaker of the National Assembly or the Chairperson of the NCRP to request a full explanation. But I do think we need to give that more substance. And I don't know whether you want to contemplate what type of substance that is, but I do think just in terms of exercising oversight and accountability, we need to put the executive on terms that we can't have a scenario in which questions, more particularly, are left unanswered for months and months at a time. We have to draw a line somewhere, and we need to contemplate that. Madam Speaker, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just one or two comments. First, I would like to join my colleagues in the sentiments of expressing our thanks and congratulations to my colleague there, my neighbor, for this kind of work, really. It's quite comprehensive and very extensive. The points I simply want to comment on is the first is the resourcing of members of parliament. I think that is very, very crucial. Because even if you go to various parliaments and they don't speak about transformation of parliament, but they speak about parliament reform, their priority really becomes the resourcing of members. And I found that, yes, we have been talking about it here, but it doesn't really come right. And at times you find that members are competing with the officials for resources. Who gets the laptop first, is it the official or the member? Now that needs to be looked at. The other point that I also wanted to raise was the issue of Lekhutla, Inkundla, which is also here, which I commend very much. I know that all parties have their own Lekhutla, Inkundla. But I think if we are going to grapple with the national agenda, we may have to see how do we converge this idea or concept of Lekhutla. What I see is that we are also in disarray when it comes to various policies. For instance, the national economic policy, we have different views as different parties. When it comes to the question of transformation, the ideas are not the same. When it comes to the concept of democracy, the ideas are not really the same. We don't agree. We don't come to any kind of convergence. And therefore, if we don't do that, I believe that the questions of national reconciliation, nation building, or even the idea of a South African nation becomes a pipe dream, and it's going to be like that for some time. So I'm simply saying that the idea of Inkundla, Lekhutla, can we try and make sure that it becomes a centerpiece for all of us rather than different areas. Thank you.
Deputy Speaker.
Thanks, Madam Speaker. My first point is also to congratulate the team. I think your sleepless nights are coming to an end now. Because this has been Mr. Mapela's Bible all the time. There is a lot of work done which is actually going to give meaning to Parliament. And what I really like much is resourcing members so that we have institutional memory. And I was saying the other day that when I joined Minerals and Energy as a member of the Portfolio Committee, I should not start from scratch. I should have something, or the committee should have something like a template which has everything that the previous committees have been dealing with so that we don't reinvent the wheel. You come into the committee and you want to say, let's have an asbestos summit. It was held in 1998. So why don't you go into the memory of the institution and check what are the gaps after that conference, what has then happened? You know, rather now all start calling the stakeholders again because there's nothing, the chairperson has moved on, is in business somewhere and so on, but the institution itself has nothing that says to you as an honorable member, as soon as you are given this committee, here is your Bible. These are the things that you're supposed to know in that committee. So I think I see that happening, and also the emphasis of the tools of trade, which I think the report is actually very firm on making sure that members of parliament in those committees, which are actually the engine room of the institution, are given the tools that they need. The other point that I really want to mention is on conventions and protocols. They are brought to Parliament for ratification, and that's the end of it. The reporting by the state to the United Nations, it be the United States of Nations and so on, is now purely in the hands of the state. It's purely in the hands of government, and there is no stage where Parliament comes in to find out. That convention that we signed in 1995, is it still relevant to our people? What reporting is happening? For instance, we all speak when we debate the women issues about the CEDAW protocol, the protocol on against all forms of discrimination against women. We ratified the protocol and the convention as this country. The last and only report that the United Nations got was in 1998. We're supposed to have sent a report in 2002 and in 2006, but there is no mechanism of saying that any report that goes, Mr. Mapela, should find a way of going through the representatives of the people so that we know what is being said on behalf, on behalf of the people that we are leading, we know what is happening there. So, if we did not engage with the Commission on Gender Equality, we wouldn't have known that we are actually having outstanding reports. And I'm just saying that to add on to what Honorable Mentor said, I'm sure if we can sit down and do an audit of all those conventions and protocols, we'll find that there are quite a number of things that are going to shock us. So I'm just saying that I'm very happy that the report is raising those issues, and I think that it's a very good report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Speaker. Any more hands? Before I come to you, Mr. Lopez. Any more hands? Now, just before I take Honorable Batella, I want to say that I also would like to congratulate them for a job well done. There were times when I thought I would see his tears at past Joint Rules Committee meetings, when we would get to the meeting and we would not be ready to adopt, and I think he just wouldn't believe. He would come there and you could see that he just can't believe that these honorable members are not adopting this document. So there's been, and I'm not talking about last year, you know, before that already. So it's a job well done, a lot of time and thoughts and energy has gone into it. A couple of comments. A lot of the issues, there are a number of issues, maybe I should say a number of issues in this document that are also subjects of discussions or are being handled in other documents, in other work that has happened within Parliament as well. And I would then say, as the document is adopted, it should be adopted in principle, but we should then do some fine tooth combing and say, you know, let's just check what we're saying in the other document, which is dealing with the same issue, so that we say the same things. We don't say one thing here and elsewhere we say something else. You know, so we rationalize the views and the approach to things. Because, see, I'm not even sure sometimes when we have issues whether they belong here, strictly speaking. You know, like, for instance, the issue of the resourcing of members of parliament, I'm not sure it really belongs to oversight and accountability. I know, for instance, there's a draft policy on parliament's budget which looks at that issue of what are the resources you want to give to members and why, on what basis, you know. So I'm just saying, let's look at both and see that they talk to one another. On the issue that was raised by Honorable Mentor on international agreements and commitments and so on, that issue is also raised in a study we had commissioned back in 2006 with Professor Guto, you'll remember. It is raised sharply, actually, in the very first chapter of that report. And it would be interesting for us to look at what is said there, because, indeed, it's an issue that has arisen even at the level of the SADC Parliamentary Forum, that while we don't want to usurp the role of the executive, and mind you, in many instances, it's not even the members of the executive who are members of parliament. It's many times officials that conduct those discussions and negotiations out there. What's the role of parliamentarians in ensuring that the basis is the correct basis on our constitution, on our legal framework and our statutes that informs those things there? Because by the time we see what we have to ratify, all the thinking and the basis and all of that has already gone, you know, it's water under the bridge. And we are really coming at the tail end, and many times we are rushed. We have to sign, ratify, done. We are not quite sure really what it is you are committing yourself to in terms of the things that are the contents of those agreements. So I think we need to look at that issue as raised in that document to see also how and where we should deal with it. whether it has to come back to this document or not. But as Honorable Mentor says, I mean, even when we adopted the Constitution, we knew that you can't say it is cast in stone. You know, on an ongoing basis, you open the door and you say, is there something we need to revisit? And so we will do the same with this document. Honorable Bakela, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Speaker. I think the comments were quite useful. And I think some of them do get expression in the chapters in details, which I was just rushing through. But I think they do reinforce. But as is also said, that we need to look at other documents also to reinforce or do whatever we with some of the chapters, and I think they are most welcome. Particularly the one raised by Mentor, it's on chapter 4.1. This way. Okay. So it's just that probably it needs to be reinforced. And completely Chisa, the one on the research is also somewhere there where we say Parliament must then develop some kind of an agreement with these institutions also of sharing knowledge, sharing research, and then so forth. So that we don't just inwardly looking, but also outwardly looking. So there's a chapter that is dedicated to that, which is chapter 7. I think we've listed that category, that these are some of the things that we need to do. In response to the 14 days and then 21 days, the rationale behind it was that we needed to create space between that compliance and also the follow-up that we need to do, the monitoring and then the tracking, so that then there's no bottleneck within the system itself. Because when it's at 14 days, so this bottleneck probably are some of the issues, but also because there was no mechanism of tracking and monitoring, and which we are now introducing, is then to really give that space of 21 days to be able then to process things, and then there's no bottleneck. And if you have pressed yourself on the 14 days, obviously you find that the bottleneck is so congested that it will not serve the purpose. So I think the rationale at the time was that the 21 days is quite sufficient, minus weekends, or including weekends, we didn't look at that particular issue. But then our monitoring system and the tracking unit that we're going to be creating, and whatever technology systems that we're going to be establishing to ensure, therefore, that there's compliance, and then indeed things that are blocked in the system are quickly responded to, we think it will do well. On the sanctioning, obviously, we said that after exhausting the situation, mechanisms can then be developed. What else? And then quite a number of ideas came, but when we deal with the rules, where the expression will then can be adequate enough, there was one example for naming them in Parliament, but the Speaker naming those that do not do. It's a sanction itself on its own. But without shaming them. Others say name and shame. But those are the mechanisms we are leaving to the details of the rules when we deal with the issue of sanctioning and how can we improve. Because oversight is not an adversarial activity as far as the institution is concerned. It's what is the mandate of the people elected and the mandate of the executive. And the consciences are interdependent, interrelated, however enjoined together to ensure, therefore, that there's deliver on the goals and objectives as set out in the Constitution. So a mechanism of that nature, therefore, is needed to harmonize but deliver on the mandate and then not compromise on the delivery of the mandate and where it is not happening. But that does not mean we are enemies as executive and also as legislature. But the issues of the opposition, the ruling party, those we don't deal with them, they belong to the parties, and obviously parties express themselves differently on the issue. Speaker, I think some of the other issues will just take us as points, but I want to also take this opportunity to thank all the people that really participated in this particular process. Sometimes we'll be here until 12 midnight, weekends, and so forth. That Speaker yourself, your interaction and for opening your door to keep on expressing frustrations and ideas. Mr. Masangu, where Mr. Sudona would always go and say, I don't know what to do now, you know, and so forth, that gave encouragement. Mr. Deutsch for ably leading the process of the best practice guide and the committee section work, and Mr. Nene for the development of this money amendment bill, and also as part of the conveners, and then all members of the task team, Chohan Kota, Mike Ellis, Ian Davidson, Barbara Ogen, Kadian, Marley, Matigiza G, Masuta TM, Kadisi BG, Gugan ML, Mulder, CP, Nene N, Andrew Snell, Oliphant, MN, Ravi PJ, T. Khalani, FC 10, A. Watson, VV Ventful, J. Von Armelve, and Jane Fox. And then all the staff members, including the project sponsor, that is the Deputy Secretary of Parliament, Mr. Handy Gwani was still here, Mr. Mansoura taking over from him, Advocate Majolo, Advocate F. Jenkins, Advocate Atikari, Buren J.M.S., Kunas, George, M.J. Engelbracht, Dr. L. Gabriel, Clerk of Papers, M.P. Libeko, Mr. Yago, Ms. Mene, Muhammad Frizla, Mula Mama Jolo, George Matigiza, Advocate Pindila. And the project office of George Kunas and the team there are joining Cecilia Malan, Bradley Jeff Tapp, and the Research Division, particularly Sharon Dahoud, Language Services, Mark Philander, Andrew Bailey from Fatima Badin, next to me here, Dumi Mukhorosi, Alex Bergensmith, managing for Excellence PTY LTD, for the wonderful work. And in absentia, and those people who are part of the team, Nathan Lego, who started the process, is as long as that speaker. And then also Douglas Gibson, who also had left the parliament, also somewhere else. Who also contributed one or the other into the processes. Those are the people I just really wanted to mention and say thank you very much. And then there's a document that we'll submit, not for discussion, but as issues that came as constitutional or political issues. Do we need a Speaker of Parliament? We say that one, we leave to the other processes. We don't deal with it. Do you want to legislate on oversight? We leave it to other processes. People can look at that. On the cooperation of governance and separation of powers in relation to the provinces, which one do you say is encroaching, which one do you say doesn't encroach, we give to the other processes. Accountability of the judiciary to parliament visited us, whether they should be accountable to, except the money aspect of it, we say it doesn't belong to the model. Powers, Privileges and Immunity Act that protects only parliamentarians, but people appearing before committees or parliamentary committees are not protected. There are two incidences in two provinces where they have been sued for saying certain things about other people as they were answering and responding to the issues. We say we're leaving them to the other processes. And then the last one is the issues of the clearly refining issues between the NCP and NA and then clean in that area so that there's no encroaching and also duplication of between, because the mandates are quite different and quite separate. These issues, we just submit them for reading other processes other than here. They don't become here. They do visit us in our processes, but we're submitting them for the other. And the document will be printed in a very nice A5 page. It's in my constitution there. Can you take it out? Suleiman? Yeah, the yellow one. That's how it's going to be printed out and it will be circulated to members as adopted in principle. Yeah, the very one that we presented today. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, I assume that we are then formally adopting the report in principle, with all the discussion that we have had today being taken into account and the final work that would have to be done to finalise the actual document. Can we agree on that? Thank you very much. Having done that, honourable members, I am happy to inform you that your lunch, your finger lunch, might actually be getting finished outside. Because I saw a few people there and I'm not sure that they are not actually attacking that finger lunch. But thank you very much. But I want to also say, when we come back from this break, this next break, we must find time.